Welcome to 2819. This is the show where we aim to inspire you to make disciples of all nations. I'm Sandra Dimas.
And I'm Brian Rohenbacher. And this is the television outreach of Reasons to Believe, a viewer support ministry where science and faith converge.
And you know what else it is?
What?
It's our 1 year anniversary.
Awesome. Yes, yay. It has been so, well, I know before the show even aired, you were working on it for months. So you've been in for the long haul.
Yeah.
So in the past year, what's been like your favorite moment, your favorite part of the show?
Can I say having you as a co-host has been so fun? Like, I love that.
Oh, that was so sweet. Awesome.
Yeah, yes. And just growing and getting to interact with different people and just see how we can connect our faith to so many different topics. So that's been fun.
That's awesome. Yeah, well, it's been a great year. I've loved being on the show. So we hope you guys are joining us for another year and look forward to everything we're going to be doing.
Yeah, and you know, you definitely want to connect with us. We have this photo up here of this beautiful cake, and we'd love to hear what your favorite moment has been on 2819. So connect with us on social media. Find us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. We're at 2819 Show. We'd love to hear your thoughts.
And if you want just the audio version of our show, you can find that on Apple Podcasts and Google Play. Just make sure you search Reasons to Believe podcast to hear everything that's going on.
And you know what? We have an exciting new resource to share with you. It's called our RTB Conversation Cards.
Yes, and these are the perfect card for outreach. It fits right in your pocket and has some great content to help you out with your evangelical opportunities that God brings before you.
Yes, and you can use these cards in everyday conversations and in any opportunity to just share your faith.
So make sure you visit shop.reasons.org to get your set today.
And for a limited time, you can get a set of these cards as a gift for any donation that you send in.
You can make a donation at reasons.org/2819. And just remember, not only are you getting these awesome cards, but you're supporting resources like this show.
Now it's time for a quick rundown. We're going to have in our Nexus segment, Erica Carlson will address the question, can science uncover evidence for God?
And in Culture Talk, Sandra will be talking with Hugh, asking the question, what's so special about Earth's orbit around the sun?
Yeah, great birthday episode.
Yes.
Anniversary episode. In our give and take, Caitlin will talk with Jeff Zwering. So he'll be the one answering questions today. And he's going to talk about how we can share our faith using science.
And in RTB 101, Crystal will be talking with Fuzz, asking what's the difference between theistic evolution and old Earth creationism. And this is going to be a great segment because as an old Earth creationist, a lot of times people do label me as a theistic evolutionist. Yep. So there's quite the difference. And so we hope you guys like that segment.
Let's check it out. Now it's time for RTV 101. This is the segment where we talk about practical questions to help train you to share your faith with friends and family more effectively. And it's the big 1 year anniversary of 2819. Mm. And I'm here to celebrate this with my friend, Dr. Fuzz Rana. You know, on our very first show, Fuzz, Hugh and I talked about the question, what is old Earth creationism? Yeah. So I thought it'd be great if we kind of circled back to that, because this segment is all about kind of grounding us in our roots. So let's talk about the differences between old Earth creationism and theistic evolution. And mm-hmm. I thought that might make a good conversation. Sure. So let's start with old Earth creationism. Give us a little definition of that.
Well, I mean, as the name implies, someone who's an old Earth creationist is a Christian who believes that the Earth is old, who accepts the scientific dates for the antiquity of the Earth, the antiquity of the universe. Old Earth creationists would look at the fossil record and say that that fossil record is a real history of life on Earth. But we are also creationists in that we believe that God directly and personally intervened throughout the history of life on Earth to bring about that history and is ultimately responsible for the origin and the design of life. And so an old Earth creationist would be really friendly, comfortable with the concepts of intelligent design.
So we're skeptical that God chose to create through evolution. Rather, it's interventions, repeated miraculous interventions at key moments in Earth's history.
That's right. Many times people will conflate old Earth creationism with theistic evolution. And that's a really important point, is that we are skeptics of the evolutionary paradigm, of the capacity of evolution alone to explain the origin and the history and the design of life.
Well, very good. Well, so let's talk about our theistic evolution friends, because if when we go to our local church, you know, there might be someone that we meet in our small group or our pastor or someone who has a little different point of view. So step us through that.
Yeah, well, and why I think people sometimes equate old earth creationism and theistic evolution is because both positions, again, accept the antiquity of the earth, we accept the antiquity of the universe, we accept the reality of the fossil record as a history of life on earth. But the big difference is how we view the evolutionary framework. Theistic evolutionists embrace the evolutionary framework, in fact, argue that God employed evolution exclusively to bring about his creative purposes, including the creation of humanity. Whereas, again, old earth creationists would reject the idea of an evolutionary history of life. Theistic evolutionists are not real comfortable with intelligent design concepts. Another big point of departure has to do with the historicity of Adam and Eve. Old earth creationists accept Adam and Eve as real historical individuals created uniquely in God's image that gave rise to all of humanity. Whereas theistic evolutionists would say, with Adam and Eve, we've got a spectrum of views here. They might be not even real people, mythical or theological constructs, to maybe they were representatives, but they were part of a group of humans, that they weren't the very first humans. And in fact, they're not necessarily the ancestors of all humanity. So that's another big point of departure.
And our friends at Biologos would be a ministry that would advocate for a theistic evolution position.
That's right.
So if people run across that on the internet, they'll kind of know, like, right, Biologos is theistic evolution, reasons to believe is old earth creationism.
That's right.
Now, in your capacity as a person who's always looking into the literature, especially in the life sciences, I'm just curious, can you tell us why you're an old earth creationist? Why aren't you a theistic evolutionist?
Because I think old earth creationism makes the best sense of all of the data. Now, from a scientific perspective, when I look at the design that we see in biochemical systems or in biological systems, the only conclusion I can come to is that design truly reflects the work of a mind. But also, I see some very real deficiencies in the evolutionary paradigm. It can't account for the origin of life. In fact, some of the most important transitions in the history of life really don't have very good evolutionary explanations. The origin of complex cells, the origin of body plans. So there are a lot of reasons to be skeptical of the claim that evolution can explain everything in biology. So when you couple it with the design and the inability of evolution to explain all of life, I think an old earth creationist position is preferable. Now, from a biblical standpoint, when I look at scripture, I don't know how to read scripture, particularly the creation accounts, with an eye towards God using evolution to create. It looks to me God is personally and directly involved. And once you start tinkering with the concept of a historical Adam and Eve, the theological fallout is rather extensive, all the way from biblical inerrancy. What do we mean by the image of God? Was there a real fall? What is original sin? How do we understand the atonement? And there's all kinds of other secondary theological issues that are impacted. The theology of marriage, the theology of work, the theology of sexuality. So the list goes on and on. So when it, as a package, I think old earth creationism does a better job of accounting for the science and the biblical data.
Very good. And I guess what I'm thinking now is, I also know you're on the road a lot when you're talking to non-Christians. Also on social media, you're interacting with a lot of non-Christians. Wouldn't it be more advantageous to presenting the gospel if you were a theistic evolutionist? I mean, doesn't your position kind of put up obstacles?
You know, I oftentimes hear that if we're going to be taken seriously by the scientific community and scientifically minded people, we've got to embrace evolutionary creationism or theistic evolution. But in my experience, that's not the case. Because what I see when I see non-believers exposed to the idea that maybe God used evolution to create, their comment will be, at least you accept evolution, but they're not really impressed with this, because many people adopt the mindset that, look, if I can explain life's origin and history with evolution, then God isn't necessary. And so it, in terms of coming up with the simplest explanation would be a naturalistic one. What I find is, for people like that, you really have to dislodge them from their position by showing them that there's real evidence for design in nature and that design looks like it points to a mind, and give them some reason to be skeptical, even if it's momentarily, about the capacity of evolution to explain biology. And now you can help establish the fact that there is a creator, and then the gospel makes sense. And it only makes sense if first you believe a creator exists. So I think old earth creationism is a better pathway to that than theistic evolution.
Well, you've certainly given me a lot to think about, Fuzz. I want to thank you. A couple points in there I haven't considered before. And I want to encourage you, if you'd like to dig a little deeper into this question, there's a great resource that we have called Old Earth or Evolutionary Creation. And we should probably mention that our friends at BioLogos call themselves sometimes evolutionary creationists.
Yeah, they prefer that instead of theistic evolution.
Very good. And now we're going to hear from our friend, Dr. Erica Carlson, and she's going to be exploring the question, can science uncover evidence for God? Let's check it out.
I am a theoretical physicist. Modern day physics tends to have this division of labor where we have the theorist, which is me, doing math in an office, and we calculate the way the world ought to be. And then there are experimentalists who go into a laboratory and measure the way the world actually is. And so then we get together and we discuss, are they matching up or are they not matching up? But the very fact that I can write down equations that have something to do with what we find in the universe, to me that says that there's a creator who wants to be found, who wants to be discovered. Because believe me, we theoretical physicists, we could write down equations that are so complicated, you would never figure it out empirically. I mean, right, in order to empirically discover what the actual law is, you have to be able to control the variables. You have to have a small enough number of variables to where you can actually control them. You also need what physicists call a separation of energy scales. If you have three or more things happening at roughly the same energy scale, you'll never figure it out. So what we see in nature is actually, there is this lovely hierarchy of link scales. Of link scales and energy scales. Those are tied. To where we can hone in on one effect at a time and figure it out. Why in the world is it that way, right? We could write down self-consistent laws that describe the universe that would involve many more variables, many more energy scales coming together, and you'd never be able to untie the evidence strand. It would be like a Gordian knot, and we would just never make progress.
So it's almost like the creation is designed in a way to make it amenable to discovery.
Well, I think you have to ask that question. It absolutely begs that question. Why in the world can we figure this stuff out to begin with? Why are we capable of understanding those underlying laws? And to me, I see an answer to that in Scripture. I see that in the Proverbs, King Solomon said that it's the glory of God to hide a matter, but it's the glory of kings to seek it out. That's Proverbs 25. And we're also told that Solomon was very knowledgeable about natural sciences. It says that he could talk about many different animals and many different plants, and so he understood this, that that God had hidden these things only a little bit, kind of enticing us to go in and discover them. And Paul makes reference to this in his sermon on Mars Hill. He talks about how God has hidden himself, but just a little bit, so that we might grope after him and seek after him and find him. He's only a little bit hidden.
I hope you enjoyed that clip from Dr. Erica Carlson. If you'd like to hear more from our scholar community, visit reasons.org and search Voices. Now it's time for Culture Talk. This is the segment where we talk about the intersection of science, faith, and pop culture, and how culturally relevant topics can be used to start conversations about your faith. I'm joined with astronomer Hugh Ross. Thank you for joining us.
You're welcome.
You know, today is our birthday episode, or our anniversary episode. You know what that means?
I do.
We have 1 year of orbiting the sun. We've done one full rotation around
one full
sun.
Revolution.
Your one full revolution, yes, not rotation. So let's talk about that. Let's talk about Earth's orbit around the sun, because it's kind of a fascinating, all of the design put into that is just so fascinating. So let's talk first about Earth's orbit. Tell us what is special about it.
Well, the shapes of the orbits of our eight planets, mm-hmm. is beautifully designed to make our existence possible. I mean, what's unusual about our planetary system is all the planets except Mercury have very close to circular orbits, mm-hmm. which means that you get orbital stability, which is essential for life here on planet Earth, but you don't want them to be perfectly stable. It's the gravitational tugs that we get, the gentle tugs we get from Saturn and Jupiter and Uranus and Neptune, that actually cause the shape of our orbit to change very slightly, and that very subtle change generates a very subtle ice age cycle, which, as I explained, an improbable planet is critical for having billions of human beings live on planet Earth at one time. Is really the only way we can grow enough food for billions of human beings. And we see no other planetary system that has this extraordinary configuration of a planetary orbit that's unique to us.
Yeah, so that's a lot of information to unpack. You're talking about first, like the shape of our orbit around the sun. And you talk about, I love the word you use, like gentle tugs that we're getting from our neighbors. So if we're getting these gentle tugs, like what about other planets? Is that something that we see in other galaxies that we see that similar orbit?
Okay, we've seen about 2,900 planetary systems beyond our solar system. And you look at those systems, the big planets that are far away from the their host stars and the Earth have highly eccentric orbits, which means that instead of being nearly circular, they're quite elliptical, which means that they're going to have different gravitational pulls on the small planets at part of the orbit than the other part. And that basically disturbs the stability orbits and makes all the planets non-candidates for life.
So for Earth then, and it's wonderful to hear, like you're talking about these all these other orbits that we've seen, and the planets, the planetary orbits are such that it makes life not possible on those planets. But for Earth, I mean, obviously life is here. So it's not just the orbit, though. I've heard you talk about other things about how our Earth traverses in the galaxy that make it support life. So can you talk about even like its axis?
Well, yeah, we have a rotation axis tilt of 23.5 degrees. And because we got a single gigantic moon that orbits close to the Earth, that stabilizes the tilt of our rotation axis. When you look at the other planets in our planetary system, the rotation axes do this.
So they kind of move for our listeners.
Which means you get radically changing seasons, which would be a big problem for any kind of advanced life. Only on planet Earth do we have this condition of a small planet orbited by a close gigantic moon. And that's what it takes to stabilize the tilt of the rotation axis. But the other thing we notice about that, make the moon just 1 or 2% more massive, our rotation axis becomes unstable. And so, you know, why wasn't it a lot less? So what we discover is we need the mass to be near the maximum to stabilize the tilt of the rotation axis in order to slow rotation period down to 24 hours in the precise time window when we humans can exist. 24 hours is optimal for us.
So any alteration to the axis or any alteration to the moon, really, in its size.
Any alteration to the mass or the orbit of the moon would mess things up. It's got to be just right.
And what would happen? Like maybe even in other planets, what happens if their axis isn't the same as ours?
Well, when the axis, like look, for example, you look at Mars, when the axis tilts over, all of its ice melts and a new polar cap has to form because now you've got the rotation axis tilting down closer to the sun. And so it radically disturbs the climates. And if you want to be able to grow food for animals, you need stable climates. You want winter and spring and fall and summer to be predictable and stable. And that won't happen unless your rotation axis tilt is stable.
So all of this adds up to something that seems pretty well designed for life. How can we step into that conversation with maybe some of our non-believing friends who think, well, we're just here and we got lucky. How would we speak into that?
Well, you can say we got lucky in multiple independent ways. I mean, one coincidence, maybe hundreds of coincidences that simultaneously line up at the right time and the right place to make our existence possible. That doesn't look like a coincidence to me. I mean, one thing you can do with the rotation axis, it is stable, but it's not perfectly stable. It goes between 22 and 24.5 degrees. And it's that very subtle change that plays a critical role in, again, developing the just right kind of ice age cycle that makes possible the existence of not just a million humans on Earth, but billions of us. So we can thank God that it's stable, but not perfectly stable, and unstable at exactly the right amount and with the right periodicity to make this conversation even possible.
So that's a great resource you mentioned, Improbable Planet. So that's available at reasons.org for anyone who wants to dig in deeper to this topic.
And
right?
We talk about the revolution and the rotation axis too.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for that, Hugh. If you want to hear more from Dr. Ross, visit reasons.org and search today's new reasons to believe. Now we're going to head over to Give and Take, where Jeff Swierink is actually going to be interviewed by Caitlin Carr. She's going to talk to him about how to talk about science and share your faith. Let's check it out.
Hello, I'm Caitlin Carr, and welcome to Give and Take. This is a segment where we talk about new scientific discoveries that can help you further share your Christian faith. Today, we're going to continue on with 2819's birthday episode, and so we are turning the tables around, and we are joined by Jeff. So, welcome, Jeff.
Hi, Caitlin. It's good and strange to be here.
Yes, on the other side. So today, we're going to talk about some highlights for you, give you a chance to answer some questions. So you have a very unique way of how you structure each Give and Take episode. And we're going to talk about the first way of that, which is you are able to tackle challenges that may seem challenging in the Christian faith that I'm sure many of the audience members also have questions with. So take us through some of those that you were able to show actually aren't challenges for Christianity.
Yeah. Well, that's something I found having grown up as a Christian and being interested in science as I really started to think about how they work. There were just times where I'm like, okay, does this really work with Christianity or not? And one of those that I think is just kind of perennial in the Christian community is, what do we do if things are really old, if the earth and the universe really are millions or billions of years old? And so we had a segment on where we had Ken Samples, who's a philosopher theologian. We had Hugh Ross, who's an astronomer, just to kind of talk about what are the issues that are going on there? And so we talked about some of the evidence of why scientists think the earth and the universe is old, and how strong is that? And is that something that we could just, well, this is going to pass? And the evidence is really pretty strong for that. And then we spent quite a bit of time just tackling the theological issues surrounding that. So we talked about the meanings of the word day and what does that have to do in there. And we talked about just kind of some of the historical discussion of how Christians have thought about this. And often it can be presented as, oh, the age really is not an issue at all. Or it can be presented as though, unless you take this particular word, you're actually undermining the authority of Scripture. And that's what I loved about that discussion, is that we were able to show that, no, if you hold Scripture in high regard and really want to study God's creation, they do work together. And if the earth and the universe really are millions and billions of years old, that actually works well together, that you're not undermining the authority of Scripture. You're actually buttressing the authority of Scripture in that view. And I thought that was just a fascinating takeaway.
I love that Give and Take is being able to provide that platform to discuss that issue.
Well, and one of the things that drives me in having those particular discussions is just, it was a recognition I had that if God is who he says he is, that he's the author of creation and he's the inspiration for Scripture, that when we study both, they ought to agree. And that's where, you know, when we look at this age of the earth thing, how old are the days and the authority of Scripture, that's where I think we really are buttressing the authority of Scripture because we show that they really do agree well with one another. And that gives me great confidence that Christianity is true and equips me to go out and share my faith.
That's so awesome. I love another part of the show that you do is you are able to talk about new scientific discoveries that are really exciting. So what are some that you found interesting and that you were able to talk about on this segment?
I think one of the most groundbreaking ones we did, or just breakthrough discoveries that we talked about, was related to junk DNA. And I just kind of set the stage of that conversation as where I first began interacting with that. And as an astrophysicist, I don't do that a lot, but after I graduated from graduate school, I was in a colloquium and the fellow was talking about how junk DNA provides just great evidence for evolution and that we really are descended from all these other creatures because that's exactly what you would expect in an evolutionary environment, because you would expect a little bit of stuff to work and then a whole bunch of just relics of what was left from past creatures. And as a Christians, we really didn't have a good response to that. But one discussion I had with Fuzz and Ken Samples was about a project where they were actually doing experiments to see how active is the genome. And so it's called the ENCODE project. Okay. And what they had done is designed some experiments that were meant to measure how much of the genome was active. And so we know there's certain parts that produce amino acids, make the genes, if you will, and then there's all this other stuff that was considered junk. Well, when they did the experiment in the ENCODE project, what they found was that not just this little segment was active, but more than 80% of the genome was active.
Wow.
That means that 80% of the genome is doing stuff inside the body, that it's not junk DNA, if you will. It's actually stuff that is equipping life to live, if you will. Yeah. And so that's just one of those that kind of turned the tables. What was this strong evidence that seemed for the evolutionary mechanism now actually provides great evidence that it's all there with a purpose. There's all a design behind it. I think that's just fascinating.
Yeah, that's so awesome. I love the discoveries that come out that just help strengthen it further. But you've also had guests on Give and Take, and mm-hmm. some of those guests are visiting scholars that have a variety of different degrees. Mm-hmm. So take us through some of those.
Well, and again, I think this is really important because while we've got some biochemistry and molecular biology and physics and astronomy and a little philosophy and theology thrown in, that's kind of the extent of what our expertise is. So having this visiting scholar program where there are just expertises from theologians and philosophers and biologists and chemists and geologists, it's just fascinating to be able to talk to them. And so three that I just found particularly fascinating mm-hmm. in this discussion was as a medical doctor, Eddie Del Rio, who came on and talked about the crucifixion. And so from a medical perspective, as you're going through crucifixion, what's happening to the body, what's physically happening. And so when they poked the water and blood and water flowed, and you're just kind of giving some of the medical background for that. Wow. And what he was articulating is that the description given in scripture of how all that played out and the signs that Jesus showed and what happened in there, that those actually match what we know, one, historically of how crucifixion happened. But two, the Bible gives us an accurate description of it. And where you affirm or buttress the authority of Scripture, that to me provides an equipping to go out and share the gospel. And one of my, in my class of favorites, is a discussion I had with Ken Wolgamuth. He's a geologist. Mm-hmm. And as much as I like astronomy, I like knowing how the earth is formed because there's just a lot of power going on in the earth. And so we spent a long time just talking about what's going on in the Grand Canyon and really kind of looking at some of this old earth, younger stuff. Is there evidence in the Grand Canyon for great antiquity? And how do we use that to show that God's at work and there's a purpose and all going on in there? Yeah. That's just three of the things. So we got a doctor, a philosopher, theologian, a geologist, and there are others that we did. It's just kind of neat to see the community of scholars that are working to show that Christianity really is a rational and reasonable faith.
Jeff, thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to turn the tables around on you today. And I just want to encourage everyone out there to come back each week for new scientific discoveries that can help you further share your faith with friends and family.
Thanks for joining us this week on 2819, and thanks for joining us for our one-year anniversary episode.
We hope this episode has helped you just share your faith with confidence and compassion.
And if you want to support resources like this show and this cake, please visit reasons.org/2819.
And don't forget to follow us on social media. We're on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at 2819 Show.
That's right. Send lots of comments on your favorite memory from the show over the past year.
We'd love to hear from you.
See y'all next time.
Bye.
This cake is really good.